Hi, welcome back to Community in Code. I'm Chris, Jazz Sequence on the internet, and today we've got a guest I've been wanting to get on the show for a while. Miriam Schwab has been in the WordPress world for 2 decades. I first met her several years ago at WordCamp US in San Diego, which was the one that was the first one after COVID when we were all still trying to figure out how to stand next to each other, which also happened to be right after her company Stratic had just gotten acquired by Elementor, and she was sent to represent a company she had only just barely joined. Miriam started as a freelance content writer who noticed that the websites she was building were actually more interesting than the writing itself. So she taught herself how to build them, and then built a 13-year agency serving tech companies and nonprofits in Israel. Then she went full startup mode, co-founded Stratic, raised venture capital, got into accelerators, the whole nine yards. Stratic ended up with Fortune 500 companies and governments on it, and then Elementor acquired it, which is how she ended up as head of WordPress at Elementor, a title that basically means she does everything that keeps the most installed WordPress plugin in the world connected to the community that made it successful. We talked about what it's actually like to build a community presence inside a 21 million install company. Yes, you got that number right. Why she thinks contributing to open source is a brand investment, and how the connection she made with the Elementor founders at a tiny WordCamp in Israel many years ago eventually led to all of this. Let's get to it. Welcome to Community in Code, the podcast where we talk to the human beings behind the commits, and I'm here today with Miriam Schwab. Miriam is a head of WordPress at Elementor, a longtime WordPress developer, contributor, been in a lot of WordPressy things for a very long time, speaker, mentor, all sorts of things. Miriam, welcome to the show, and tell us about yourself.
Well, thank you for having me. About myself. Well, I got into WordPress when I was actually providing freelance services for content writing. That's what I was doing first. My degree is in English literature, and that seemed like a pretty natural progression from that. But the truth is that when I started studying in university, I started out studying computer science, actually. But I had just moved to Israel, and while I knew Hebrew quite well, there's a difference between knowing Hebrew for like standard conversation and studying computer science in Hebrew. Mm. That is a whole other level. And I found that I really just didn't know what they were talking about. Like, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what the words meant. And so I decided to switch into basically the only thing that was taught in English at the time in Israel, which was English literature. I've always had a dual love for technology and literature, actually. Avid reader. I do also enjoy writing, but also have loved technology since I was a kid. My dad bought us our first like PC. I don't know how old I was, like maybe 8. But he bought 2, actually. First he had 1, and I think we were driving him crazy, or like especially me, that we always wanted to use it. It was so cool that he actually got a second one for us in his office space in our house. Like he would be on one and I would be on the other. And he would buy me these coding books where they would just have the code on like printed pages. Like this was kind of old school, right?
Yeah.
And I would type it in, and then it would turn into like a snake game or something. And I was like amazed. And he would also buy me these magazines. I think it was called 321 Contact. It was like a science magazine. And, you know, it was about like nature science and tech science. And I always loved the things about space and all that. Anyway, so I always had like very strong interest and love for where technology was going. But it just the way things worked out was that I studied English literature, which I actually really loved. But then after I finished it, I figured, okay, I'm going to work in that kind of space, which I did. But then what was happening was the content that I was writing was going into websites, and the websites were way more interesting to me than the content that I was writing. I was enamored with the internet and what it offered. It made so many things accessible to all of us. You know, now, you know, with AI, it's like a whole other level. But then already just the idea that I could search for information and get it. And that websites gave people a way to be in front of many other people. So I started to teach myself to build websites. That was the other wonderful, amazing thing about the internet, that it was very embedded in an open source philosophy and approach. And that's what made it what it is. So people also share a lot of information online. So I could learn from others. Like, basically, I would just search for, okay, how do I do this? How do I do that? You know, Stack Overflow, all that kind of stuff. And then, so I taught myself to build websites and started to offer that as a service. And then things went from there.
I remember the very first time I experienced the internet. I was probably at a library on one of their computers. They just barely got like computers hooked up to the internet or something. It was probably dial up. I don't know. It had to have been dial up. And like that was like when Yahoo was like what you used, and like, I mean, there was a couple other like directories, but like Yahoo was the thing, and like there was just like lists of links, and you didn't know what any of the links were, and you would click on a link at random and it would take you to some weird site, and like, okay, this is interesting. And then at the bottom of that weird site there'd be like, find the next site in this web ring,
right?
And then you would click on that and you'd get to some other random site that was tangentially related to the last site you had on, and then you would just get into these like you deep rabbit holes of like weird interlinked pieces, like parts of the, because the only way that you would know how, like, the only way that you would find another site was from some other site that might have linked to it through like a web ring or a guest book or like something, like, because there wasn't ranking in search, and like Google search engine ranking wasn't a thing. Like, it would, like, there was no Google. Like, it was just like a bunch of just random text pages that had a hyperlink that took you someplace, like you had no idea where you were going.
Right, totally. It was a weird and wonderful thing. It was like we all could get access to other people's weird, random, cool, fascinating, strange, like, ideas and representations of themselves. And it was so interesting. Like, that was the other thing that I really loved about the internet specifically, like beyond computers and technology, was that you could just, you know, talk to someone more regardless of where they were. Mm-hmm. And hear their thoughts and communicate with them. Whereas in the past, it was a phone call was doable, but okay, that wasn't going to happen with like strangers, and, you know, maybe email at some point, but like that was a whole other level of connection with people, removing the constraint of geographic proximity, which was always a type of constraint. And that also was so cool to me.
Yeah, for sure. Like, every one of these web pages on the internet, on the very early internet, like, represented a single human being somewhere else in the world that was completely different and separate from you, that you would never have been exposed to previously. And I've told this story before, but I paid for access to a BBS before I paid for access to the internet. So, like, I was, like, even while I was going to the library and like browsing online, the thing that I found most interesting was hanging out with people in chat rooms. And like there, that was also like a weird, wild, wonderful space of like the dial up and then like hyper term and like locking into this like text-based thing and like navigating through like an interconnected web of these, like, there's like a network that I subscribe to. Like, there is a network of these BBS servers, and so you would pick which server in which city you would want to hang out in. So You got started writing on websites, and then you started getting interested in websites. When we met, I think the first time we met, it was WordCamp San Diego. Well, no, WordCamp US in San Diego. At the time, it was the tail end, I think, of Stratic, because I think like you were just like it had not yet been announced that Elementor had acquired Stratic, which was your agency. So where does the intervening years between like making your first website to running your own agency that gets acquired by Elementor, like what happens in the in-between time?
So actually I went agency, tech company, startup. That was Stratic. Mm-hmm. Stratic was a platform for publishing WordPress websites.
Right. Yeah.
Static form, right? And then acquisition by Elementor. So basically it went like this. discovered that I love websites, start building websites, start to add that as an offering in addition to content, start to push that more as an offering because it was much more fun for me. And then that like positioned me to be one of the first people to offer WordPress as a professional solution, not just as a blogging platform for amateurs in Israel, actually. So I was well positioned when people started to turn around version 3 of WordPress and were like, oh, actually, this is a great option for our company or organization websites. Who can do that for us? Oh, Miriam, because I was already doing it, and people like kind of started, you know, it's like word of mouth or whatever. So started to do that and building custom WordPress websites for companies, a lot of tech companies and large nonprofits that, you know, needed specific attention for their activity. It was just me at first, and then grew it out to be an agency. So did that for 13 years. All along the way, I did have ideas for products. Mm. Like, especially as the years went on, I had more and more of like a push to move into the product space, but I gave it a few goes. But at the time, so like I was having kids, and I was, you know, they were little, and the agency, and I had to force myself to realize that like, you really have to learn to say no, even to yourself. Like when I bit off more than I could chew, too many things paid a price. So I left that and kept building sites and really enjoyed it. Like that was like 13 years of offering services. It was always interesting because the companies were interesting, or the organizations, like that made the work also meaningful. And also each one had their own, you know, unique take or need. And so we had to learn to do things that we hadn't done before. So there was a constant learning curve. But at a certain point, it did start to feel like, okay, I've done this for like quite a while. Also, my kids were getting bigger. And I wanted like a next challenge. And I had really wanted to move into the product space. And then that timing was around the start of the Jamstack trend. Mm. And I read a blog post by Matt Billman, one of the co-founders of Netlify, where he did a case study where he generated a static version of a WordPress site. And of course, the performance was better and, you know, all that, the scalability. I was like, oh my goodness, that's really cool. I could see that Jamstack had issues because it led people to having to do, I don't know how else to describe it, too many somersaults in the air to achieve the same thing that WordPress was achieving, you know, like you're reinventing the wheel the whole time.
Yeah.
But I thought, what if we combine these two worlds, give people WordPress as their like source of truth, where they work and they know how to work and marketing teams feel comfortable, but that's like hidden. It's almost like a staging site. And then they deploy a static version of the site to the internet. And then that site is super fast, resilient, scalable. Like it solves all their issues. A lot of the companies that came on board with Stratic, it was driven by their CISOs or someone who was like a CTO type person who couldn't stand the company was running a WordPress site. Mm-hmm. They were not sleeping at night because of it. These were people who were like, let's say they were tech companies, a lot of them. You know, their tech stack is super high end, you know, with an eye towards the future, but then their marketing team is using what they saw as like a legacy platform. But the marketing team wanted it because it was their power tool. So Stratic bridged those two groups within the company, gave the marketing company the team what they wanted, and then the tech team or the tech leaders could sleep at night. So that was like the vision of it, and it ended up coming to fruition with Fortune 500 companies using it, governments, the UN, you know, all sorts. So built it up, raised venture capital funding for that, and did that for like 6 years. I was in some startup accelerators at the beginning, which was a great experience. The whole thing was a great experience, like wild, fun, great learning experience, met amazing people, lots of sleepless nights for me and my co-founder and our team, a lot of pain and suffering also. Building a startup is, you have to go into it with a lot of emotional strength or something, but yeah. And then Elementor, I knew the founders. I met them first when I was organizing WordCamps in Israel. So one of the first ones that I did, they sponsored. At the time, they were like three guys with like a folding table. That was like, they were so small. And I think the first time they sponsored, it was like pre-Elementor. They had a product before that they called Pojo. It was like a theme that was more customizable. But then they took that to the next level with Elementor. But they would sponsor. And so we always stayed in touch and were friends. And then they were watching Stratic and had an eye on it. And that's where we ended up. But when I saw you in San Diego, first of all, that was a weird WordCamp. You remember that?
Yeah.
Like COVID.
It was the first thing post COVID, I think. Yeah, it was the first big event post COVID. And people were freaking out about it too. Like
Don't stand too close to me, wear many masks. It was really limited. It was like 100 people.
It was more than 100 people.
It was like some really small amount.
It was definitely small for a WordCamp for sure.
Yeah. It was, I really think it wasn't more than 200 people. I remember the number being like super small. But it was right after, like maybe the week after Stratic had joined Elementor, we were super new there. I was trying to figure out, I felt a little bit like, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
What do I know? And it was the first time I went to an event with Elementor. And I was just like trying to figure out my place in the company, like from that perspective. So yeah, that's what
I meant. Yeah, no, I remember that. I remember you like talking about how like your company was just acquired and you really didn't know what your title was or what you would be doing anymore. But like, here you are.
Yeah, they're like, obviously you should go to WordCamp because like, you know, they know me, they knew me and my involvement in the WordPress community. So if anyone's going to go to WordCamp with Elementor, it should be me. But like, I didn't yet feel like part of the team Yeah, it was like a bit awkward for me. So yeah, that's kind of the journey more or less from agency to Stratic to Elementor.
I want to take a step back and I want to ask, was there ever was there ever something else that you looked at besides WordPress, or have you been like deep into WordPress from day one?
You know, sometimes when I've been interviewed in the past, they're like, what are your other interests and hobbies? You know, that kind of thing. I'm like, I have none. I have always been all in on WordPress. Like, you know, I think there's like a few reasons for that. I always found it really fun and interesting. There was always something new to learn, which matters to me. So it was not boring. And really the people, like I really just loved meeting the community. When I started going to like more global WordCamps, I met people that I had been following or connected with online, and then you meet them in person, it's a whole other story. And I just, you know, I really loved meeting people and seeing what they're working on. And it just continuously stayed interesting and fun and nice, like just a really nice, pleasant, good-hearted, I would say, like, I don't know, community. So I've always been in it. You know, obviously throughout the years, as things develop and evolve, like on the web and in tech, I've looked at other solutions to see if, you know, I don't want to be left behind, and I don't, you know, I want to make sure that also, let's say in my agency days, to make sure that we're offering the right solution for them. But every time I tested something out, I got frustrated by it. It was always limited. It was never as good, and I never felt as good working with it. So, you know, I dabble, but like in the end, just stuck with it. And yeah, I'm like a one trick pony.
I mean, you know, like I sort of had a similar experience when I was freelancing when I first started freelancing, I was working for a company and I was like a contract freelancer, and they sort of had their own way of doing things, which involved, getting like doing your whole design in Photoshop and then using the slicing tool to like make a HTML like table based website out of that. That was like the very early days. So that was all like just straight up HTML, but we also used Zencart whenever there was an e-commerce platform. So I got pretty good at styling that. But when I broke away and started freelancing on my own, Zencart was still a thing that I was doing for a little bit, just because I was familiar with it. But like, I played a little bit in Joomla, I played a little bit in Magento, but WordPress was the thing. Like when I started using it for myself, Like that was just so much easier when, especially like, because at the time, I think what I was doing was like I had found a script that would essentially like it'd be you'd make an HTML page and then there's like a little JavaScript thing that you would put in there, and then so like this area of the page is editable from some kind of like a back end kind of thing through this JavaScript thing, and it would actually write changes to the HTML, right? And that was like the thing that I would do if somebody needed to update their site on their own, was write that in. And I was like, when I found WordPress, it's like, okay, so that's easier. And there's so much more stuff here. Like,
Right.
why am I ever doing anything else like that? And I think there was a period of time where I'm like, okay, let's make sure I'm doing the right thing. And I tried all the other CMSs and installed them and gave them a go. And I think Expression Engine was a thing that was big at the time. And like a
You know
couple
what I
other
even tried for some reason? Cold Fusion. I don't know if you
Cold
remember
Fusion.
that.
Yeah. I don't think I ever tried Cold Fusion. That seemed a little bit too
I
daunting.
remember buying a giant book.
Yeah.
And I was like, that seems cool. There was something cool about it, but everything was just like more complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
Also,
when I think about like, I work at Pantheon and obviously we do Drupal and WordPress, and even now like I talk to Drupal developers and I've gone to a couple Drupal events and it's like, okay, like I get what Drupal is good at. It's also not the thing that I would use because it is there's a learning curve, there's a very steep learning curve, or there's a whole category of professionals that exist in the Drupal ecosystem that WordPress has never had because it's never needed it, because it's just the people that like manage the website, like not the people that put the content into the website, but the people that manage like the configuration and like structure of the website. That's a category of people. Like we talk about in WordPress, like there's sort of site builders and like maybe they're not writing the content or whatever, but they're sort of, but you don't really need that. Like it's generally speaking, accessible enough for anyone. So like I totally like relate to what you're saying, obviously. Like we're both here, but yeah, I'm always interested in the decision making process that leads people to like kind of stick with a thing for as long as, I mean, you and I both have.
I think it's like WordPress made the decisions for me. What I mean is, every time I tried to get something to happen in WordPress, it happened. Like I was able to
Yeah.
make it happen, more or less. Whereas in other platforms, I wasn't able to. So I kept choosing the one that enabled me to do what I wanted to do. I am what I call a fake developer. And what I mean is, I like barely I sat at some point in writing code and I hated it. I hated it. I don't want to do that. I want to get things together. I love tech and I understand it, so that makes me really annoying because like I look back on things from I've managed development teams and so I've learned about that. But I'll never be the one sitting and writing code. So I want to work with a platform that allows me, this like weird fake developer-y type person, to achieve what I want to achieve. And it was always WordPress.
Yeah, the thing that kept me around was, especially at the beginning, was anytime I had a question about how to do X, there was always an answer.
Exactly.
Whether it was in the codex or a blog post or something, like there was always an answer somewhere. Whereas whenever I used something else, maybe there is an answer, or maybe there wasn't, or maybe there was a forum, but maybe that forum hasn't been posted to in 3 months. Like
Right.
it was never consistent, but WordPress was always consistent for sure.
Totally.
And now you're the head of WordPress. What does that mean? It's a nice segue,
Speaking of which,
right?
it is the nice segue. So, what does it mean? Well, I was at like Elementor for like 6 months, and then the founders said, "Would you like to take on this position? We don't know what to call it. And we don't exactly have a job description. We know we need someone like you doing something like this."
Sure.
And what do you think? So I was
How is the
accepted.
position pitched? Like, what were the things that they knew that they needed?
So I could see after joining, actually, I could even see before joining from the outside. Elementor, their flagship product, the page builder or editor, whatever you want to call it, is obviously very popular, right? It's the most popular plugin and powers over 20 million sites. From the beginning, it caught on and grew quite quickly. But as the company grew and hired talent, and the people at the company are very talented, they didn't come from within WordPress. So you had the founders who were WordPress-y people, but you know, they're founders, so they can only be so involved in community related, you know, ecosystem stuff. And the rest of the team, they came from other tech companies, you know, and not necessarily even from open source. And when you're working in open source, there's definitely like a culture to that, you know. And there were a few things that were lacking. It's not just community. It's like, how do we communicate with all the levels of the ecosystem? And how are our relationships with all of the companies essentially that are contributing to WordPress by creating other products where we have shared users? How do we make sure always that the way that we're deploying our products to the repo is 1000% aligned with the guidelines? There were some missteps before I took on this position, and it wasn't out of it wasn't because they trying to not meet the guidelines. It was because there wasn't really someone who could fully be on top of it, and or something that I do on an ongoing basis, check with the plugin team whenever we want to implement something in the plugin that we think should be reviewed, and to make sure that it really aligns with the guidelines. And only if they say yes, that's okay, do we go ahead with it. We don't want to ever be doing something that's not okay. So we're super careful, and that's something. Also, setting up our Five for the Future program, that was an interesting process for me. I had to, you know, research all of that and figure out where we can even do that. We had to figure out internally, are we going to align us or just contribute internal resources like people time? But we couldn't. Everyone was too tight. So then the decision was to sponsor contributors. Okay, but how do we do that? How do we sponsor contributors in a meaningful way? Which teams need contribution? So I spoke to a ton of people in the community. You know, from the contribution related teams on WordPress.org to contributors themselves to figure out how we could start. I think the first sponsor contributor was on the performance team because at that time, that was a big pain point. Oh, and Google was working on it, and they asked us if we want to like work on it with them and like make sure, you know, help with that team. So that's where we started. It seemed like a good place to fill in the blanks, and then grew it from there. At this point, we have contributors to performance, plugin review, theme review, hosting, AI, and I think something else, but I can't remember. And you know, I manage that and stay in touch with them on an ongoing basis, get reports on what's being done to try to make sure that our contribution is valuable. So that was another thing. And it's generally anything related to Elementor within WordPress. It's a very broad position, and it involves also partnership type of like activity, whether it's like with a dollar sign attached or not. I've kind of become the face of Elementor within the community. So that's helpful for people who are trying to reach out to Elementor and having a hard time. That was very much the case before I took on the position. Like, if you wanted to talk to someone at Elementor, like, good luck. And it wasn't, again, that they didn't want to be talked to. It was that there wasn't someone to do that. So people reach out to me directly. They find me wherever, or they know me. Like, and it's different kinds of questions. They want to, you know, increase compatibility with Elementor, and they like need some dev input, or they created something for Elementor and they want to show it to us, and like, whatever, or like, it's hosting companies. They're encountering some issue. In the past, that kind of communication was full of friction. Mm-hmm. Now we have a lot of shared Slack channels with a lot of partner companies in this space, and it's great. We can really like make sure that all of our shared users have good experiences. Yeah, I don't know. It's like, it's so many things. At some point I started documenting what I do because I was like, what am I doing? You know? But it's always interesting because things are always changing. And I'm always learning. So yeah, it's an interesting position.
I know that for me as a developer advocate, like I went from, you know, being on an engineering team where like what I do in a day or in a week is very specific. It's like we have these sprint goals, we have these specific tickets, we are have a cadence, like this stuff needs to get done by this date, and that's just what you're working on. And in developer relations, that's kind of a lot more wibbly wobbly timey wimey. Like you kind of have to, like, it really demands that you are self-motivated, because otherwise you're just going to be twiddling your thumbs and like who knows what.
Oh, totally.
Like, how are you going to prioritize this thing over that thing or whatever? Or you'll just get pulled in a million different directions and never be able to focus on anything. And context switching is already, like, you know, huge. Like, I imagine that is pretty similar for you as well. So how do you sort of, like, yeah, prioritize what it is that you're thinking about in any given day?
Oh my gosh, totally. So first of all, you have to be a self-starter. At least I have to be. Also,
it's sort of like, I mean, in many ways, it's sort of entrepreneurial, isn't it?
Oh, totally. Which is amazing. And I've said that internally, actually, that I actually didn't know how I was going to last at Elementor, not because of them, but because I had never been an employee before. And I was afraid of that what would happen is why I had never been employed, which is that people would start telling me what to do. Not that I don't, I love getting feedback and input and direction. I love it. But when someone's like, you must do this, you must do that. And like, I don't know, that kind of thing, which is what I figured it's like to be an employee. I was just like, that's not for me. But this position is very entrepreneurial. And a lot of what I do feels like what I did when I was the CEO of Stratic. Because a lot of work of leading a company, and just a disclaimer, I'm not saying that I'm leading Elementor at all. I am not. But when I was leading a company, a lot of it was very relationship driven, and also a lot of like staying current on developments, competitive, you know, developments, tech, all that kind of stuff. It was like a combination of both. And I do a lot of that now. Like I actually create an internal weekly newsletter about AI and WordPress now, for example, to keep everyone up to date on where it's going, what other companies are developing, to bring that all together. I think that the more information anyone has, the better the decisions they can make. And that's how I was a CEO, and that's kind of what I'm doing now. So a lot of what I do is self-starter type stuff where I just see a need and I work to fill that gap. In the beginning, there was a lot of stuff that I was trying to fix, like, you know, our Five for the Future program, even how we sponsored WordCamps. It wasn't my vibe. Let's just say that I didn't like it. I wanted us to be more involved. Like I was the first person to speak on behalf of Elementor. Like they'd never had speakers, that kind of thing. But then I created a program encouraging other people to apply to speak, and now I'm not the only speaker, which is amazing. So there's like a lot of things that also I wanted us to sponsor other WordCamps around the world, even if we're not going there, just to support them. So set up like a process and like a way to do that. I'm very fortunate that the company and the leadership basically like just support and believe in me and trust me. So, the message to me more or less is you do you now go forth. So, and I report to the CEO, and you know, I love when I get direction and feedback and ideas from him, but mostly I'm just doing what I think I should do. So there's like stuff that I maintain, and then there's stuff that comes up that needs attention. So obviously, and especially if it's like critical, that will get priority. And then there's just new challenges or relationships or things or whatever that come my way that I pick up. Attending events on behalf of Elementor, that also is something that wasn't really happening before. I think it's important for us to have like an actual person at these events. Elementor is such a significant player that, you know, for example, at CloudFest, which I'm not at because I couldn't get there in the end, but we should be at CloudFest. We're a leading web company. How can we not be there? So I started going on behalf of Elementor. It's a great position. I'm very fortunate that I have the backing and belief of the company's leadership, and that it allows me to bring to fruition my entrepreneurial spirit, which I think would be hard if I couldn't.
You mentioned Five for the Future and sponsoring WordCamps and things, and wearing my WP Community Collective president hat for a minute. Like, obviously, you know, sponsored contribution or contribution with compensation and sponsorships in general, like, this is like, it shouldn't be a controversial topic, but yet, like, a lot of companies that are using WordPress aren't necessarily giving back to the ecosystem or giving back to the open source project itself. Like, talk through that conversation within Elementor of, like, building up this program, which, like, does like, how do you see contribution in how it works at Elementor, and how does, like, leadership or your you know, CEO that you report to, like, how does that sort of internal, like, financial math align with, like, the ideological goal of, like, yeah, we need to actually contribute back to this thing that we're, like, essentially profiting off of?
So they knew that they wanted to set up a Five for the Future program. Like, when they, it wasn't like I had even brought it up or someone, I don't know what the internal conversation was. I had been there not that long. I was still trying to figure out who I am and what I am and all that kind of stuff. I don't remember that we had actually discussed Five for the Future. I think it was probably something that I felt like they should set up, but I also didn't think it was necessarily my place to bring it up. Like, I didn't know how much I could, you know, flag things.
Sure.
Yet. Turns out that Elementor is very much a company where you can express your opinion, but I had to learn that. Yeah, it's great. So that was actually, like, the first thing that they tasked me with, like, get us set up, please, with a Five for the Future program. They didn't say how, except for, like I mentioned, when they said we're going to sponsor, like, financially rather than internally, go forth and do it. Why? Because it's the right thing to do. That's it. So when you have an open, and also, I think it's very much to the credit of Elementor's leadership that that's their perspective. They knew they needed to do this thing. They knew it was the right thing to do. They needed someone to, like, just set it up properly, who is a WordPressy person. That's what our CEO often says about me. Like, I'm WordPressy. And it's, I think you understand what that means. I think other people may think that sounds weird, but I live and breathe the ecosystem, and I understand its nuances, and you need someone like that, I think, especially in a larger organization like Elementor. It's all about WordPress. So they knew it was the right thing to do. So when you have an open source product, I think a company ends up making some decisions based on what is the right thing to do for that community at some point. Like, it's not feasible for smaller organizations. It often is not, no matter what anyone says. Like, I know what it's like. When I was running my agency, we were just running from, like, after projects, you know, you're just, like, finish one, you're like, where's the next project going to come from? Yep. There's not much breathing room at all, you know? So I think people need to, like, be realistic about their expectations about who's contributing. Like, yes, that agency is profiting off of WordPress, but what does that mean? It means that maybe they can pay their other contractors or employees and maybe give themselves a living wage. You know what I mean? Like, right. Often that's the case. So have a little sympathy. But once you have, like a thriving open source project product, then it becomes necessary. So there's, like, it's the right thing to do. But then I think if we're going to look at it from, like, a dry financial perspective, companies invest a lot of money in things that don't have a direct ROI. For example, brand is critical. I have learned the importance of brand since joining Elementor. I was very cynical about it. And now I see how much it matters, how a brand, as you know, you have to have a real product standing behind it that gives people value. But when you do that and you have a brand wrapping it up, it gives people a certain sentiment, or they have a certain sentiment towards you, and maintaining that, growing it and investing in it is super important. So a company like Elementor invests a lot in brands also. And I think that you can say that investing in contributing back to open source is a brand investment to the ecosystem. It's like our brand is that we are collaborative, cooperative, contributing. We are doing the right thing and we are good citizens of the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, the business argument that can be made for it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm involved in a lot of these conversations as well. Developer relations is very much in the sort of brand and less direct ROI sort of side of things, because, like, I've said this before, like, internally, like, the stuff that DevRel produces, the content and the outputs that we produce, very often is maybe on a very long tail. Like, I'm not going to write a blog post that's going to lead to 500 incoming leads, right? I'm going to write a blog post that someone's going to read in 2 weeks, and then in 6 months, they're going to remember that blog post that I wrote something smart about Pantheon doing something cool, and they're going to be like, oh, well, we're looking for something for this project that we're coming to, and maybe they'll be part of the conversation, right? Like, yeah, I always get, like, when ROI comes into the conversation about, like, sponsorships or about, like, open source good Samaritanism, or like, whatever, like, yeah, it's already, like, I just sort of smirk, like, whenever I hear ROI in those conversations, because, like, you're not going to get ROI from any of that stuff, but what you're going to get is something intangible. John Hawkins was on a few episodes ago, and he said that, so John Hawkins used to co-lead an agency, and they spent, I think, 2 years just going to every WordCamp that they possibly could. Wow. And it was wild. It was kind of insane. but what he said that he learned come out of that is not ROI, it's return on connection. Because it's those connections that you get from those events, from meeting people and having the conversation in person, leads to other opportunities. Maybe not today, but like he was saying that, like, they got leads, and he's gotten leads that are like somebody he's never met before, that someone he did meet talked to their friend and said, oh, you should talk to this person because they're doing something that's really similar to what you're looking for. And, like, that doesn't exist if you're not, like, having the conversation in the first place.
Oh, totally. There's no question that when I started going to WordCamps around the world and speaking, that it had a huge impact on the future of my career. At the time, I would speak, I don't know how many people would be in the hall, and I would get zero feedback. You know, like, often it's just like, thanks, bye. But then 6 months later, someone would get in touch for a web project, or, you know, and I would always say, just took one person in the audience that talk meant something to them, that it was worth it. But it's stuff that kind of activity, it's time consuming, it's expensive. It's, you know, it's very easy to say, never mind, we live in a digital age, I'm going to sit here behind my screen and that will be enough. But you can't compare to the power of a real connection. And it's the kind of thing that builds up over time. And you can't predict how, like, what is going to mean. And so you can't also be doing it because you think at some point you're going to get something out of it. I started going because I wanted to connect more with the WordPress community. And I could see how impactful it was for me to speak. I didn't know what it was going to do, but I knew that it was, like, it mattered and it meant something for my work. So, but how it would play out, I had no idea. But it turned out to play out, like, in many ways, very well. But I just loved meeting the people. So, like, you know, you have to be in it because you love the people. And if good stuff comes your way, great. And by the way, it goes the other way also. I've been very fortunate to help many people along the way who know me. Like, it goes both ways. Like, sometimes I think, wow, so good that person knows me, yeah. You know, because I can help them out with something. And yeah, it's definitely, it's been a journey, but it's worth it.
I want to talk a little bit. This probably be the last bit, but I think that it's, you mentioned a number. And you mentioned it too, like when we were doing the live stream for Angie, like the number of Elementor installs is some ridiculously high number that I can't even fathom a product being used that much. Yeah. Like, what was it always like? Like, was it like that when you joined, first of all? And then what do you credit Elementor's, I mean, objective success too?
So Elementor has been growing at a fast pace basically since it was launched. I can't remember the exact numbers, but like within, I don't know, 6 months or a year of them launching Elementor, they had reached like 1 million installs. It was like a very short amount of time, and the growth hockey stick was like crazy. And then since then, it's been growing. When I joined, it wasn't yet the most popular plugin in the repo. It was like number three. And it was like, and we would pay attention. And then it's, at one point we're like, oh my gosh, it bypassed Yoast. Yoast was like number two. Mm-hmm. And we went to number two. And then one morning we woke up and we're like, we're number one. It was crazy. So why is it growing? First of all, I think from the beginning, like in the start, it was just really the right product at the right time. It was that combination, which is like winning the lottery. And I'm not saying it was luck, because they built a product that people really wanted, but like they built that product that people really wanted at the exact right time. Mm. There were some other products already out there, but the Elementor approach gave people more capabilities. And then people just loved it. And they were just talking about it. And then they're sharing it. And also, I think at that time, at least, I don't know how long, but it was only the free version. It took them a while until they started offering the pro version. But I think that like going all in on open source like that was also a key to their success. They've been good at listening to customer feedback. There's a lot of complaints, you know, that why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? But like, if you think about the scale, so the number is now like 21 million active installs, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. So just imagine how many opinions there are there.
Sure, 21 million.
Yeah, basically. So obviously Elementor can't do everything, but there's a lot of, one of the things that I couldn't believe when I joined, because they're so big, that like how much they cared about like one person saying something negative. Mm. I'm like, you're so big. You're growing at like, I don't know how many sites a day. And you care that Joe over there, but they cared and they were always listening. So I think that probably plays a role as well. And then, you know, just really talented people working together. I have also learned, so at Elementor, HR is super important in terms of hiring the right talent. They'll spend as long as it takes to fill a position until they feel like more than 100% that the fit is right. And then, you know, there's a lot of appreciation for that. And the people who work at Elementor are really, really very brilliant. And it's really fun working with them. Everyone, you know, has their like area of expertise, and they really are an expert in that area. So whatever it is, even like what I'm doing, whenever I'm doing anything. So on the one hand, I'm kind of like a lone island. I don't have a team. I report to the CEO. He's super busy. I'm like doing my own thing. So, but I work horizontally. So like, you know, if we're sponsoring a WordCamp, I have to pull in finance, legal, design, if we're like going to have a booth. Right. Everyone's just so smart and like brings such value to the project that the output will be really good. So I think that as well. And of course the co-founders, Ariel and Yoni, their vision is very focused and strategic. And they're always thinking and rethinking. And they're also, if they hear this, they're probably not going to be like, they're like, they have humility, meaning they don't think they know everything. as all we're all like everyone is always discussing things, and yes, they'll make a decision in the end, but they don't think they know everything. And yeah, I don't know, it's like, I guess it's a combination of factors, but yeah, it's wild the reach that the company has.
Yeah.
Well,
thank you very much, Miriam, for being on the show. I'm hopefully we'll get to meet someplace in the next year. I'm sure we tend to like rotate in similar circles, as it were. Where can people find you on the internet?
So actually, I just built myself a website.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, miriamschwab.me. Someone took miriamschwab.com. They're not doing anything with it. So I took miriamschwab.me. It's a WordPress site that I built with AI. I was super excited about it. So you can, I have a contact form there and I have links, but you can obviously find me on LinkedIn, Twitter/X, all the usual places I'm there. Oh, make WordPress Slack, post status Slack.
All the Slacks. Yeah.
All the Slacks.
Well, yeah, thanks again. Thanks for being on the show. Thank you, everyone who might be watching or listening to this in the future, and we'll see you on the internet.